podcast with Dan and Scott. Hottest golf podcast, whether you like it or not. First one back in the day when that's a put at the park. 7 p.m. special where they played after dark. From the birdies to the focus to the losses and the win. Welcome podcast, patron to the show. Lead the pen, get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hottest golf podcast and I swear I ain't lying. Yeah. Leave the pen.
Welcome back, podcast patrons, to another episode of Leave the Pin Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan. And before we get into this episode, just want to let you know a few things that are going on with Leave the Pin Podcast. On our Instagram account, at Leave the Pin, you can go and get some money off Camor Sports GPS devices. You can get the handheld devices or the watches, which I prefer. Save 15% with our link in our bio. Also in our bio, go to our Bonfire merchandise page, where you can get some of our latest gear and rep Leave the Pin anywhere you go. Especially to our people in the Northeast, as we get to these cooler months, our Fall Classic, which is our best-selling sweatshirt. Look great on the course, drop some putts, lower your score with Leave the Pin gear. And as a big favor to us, if you can go to iTunes or Spotify, download, subscribe, tell your friends, leave a comment, leave a rating, we'd greatly appreciate it. So without further ado, let's get to today's episode. All right, as promised, we're here with Nick Ribeiro from Preserved Links. Nick, how you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Awesome, man. I really enjoyed kind of, you know, the off-the-air banter and getting to know a little bit about the club. So I guess before we get into anything, we got to kind of set the stage for people and let them understand what this episode is about. So correct me if I'm wrong at any point in time, but Preserved Links is a kind of a club within a club. You have to be a member at a private club to join. And we're basically taking the thought of reciprocity between clubs to like an exponential level, where members of Preserved Links can host members of other private clubs that also have joined Preserved Links and do meetups across the country. Am I correct? Close in that assumption?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. So with that being said and kind of the stage being set, give me a little bit more in-depth knowledge of how all this works, how you started it, you know, where the idea came from, and how it's grown.
So I was in various other societies beforehand, and it's a very popular concept today, especially post-COVID, because these clubs all across the country, whether they're the best of the best clubs or even local mediocre clubs, they're full. The only way to easily access these places is through a member. So there's a big market for reciprocity between club members. So essentially what Preserved Links is the community that brings those members together so that they can easily reciprocate rounds. And then we also have events. We have a members only forum where they could communicate with each other and meet each other online. Then they could come to either events or gatherings, further build relationships, which lead to shared rounds.
All right. So if I'm getting this correct, I'm a member of a private club, right? I put in an application. I want to join Preserved Links. And that could be for a myriad of reasons, right? I'm sure you have people that want to network. There's obviously the diehard golfer that just loves their course and wants to show it off. There's the person that maybe gets a little bit sick and tired of playing their own private club and wants to go and see what else is out there. How does that application process work? Let's say I'm a member somewhere. You know, do I shoot you a DM? Is there a form? How do I get in contact with you for this?
So most people either come through members we already have, like our members will nominate new members, friends they have at either their own club or another club where they've already established a relationship with. We also get a lot of DMs on social media. And then we also have an application right on our website where we have people fill them out and submit them. And then we go through them. And people join for various reasons. I mean, we have some members that have already played all the top clubs or played all the clubs on their personal list that they want to play. They're just looking for either more friends or a place to talk more about golf, which our forum offers. We have guys that are heavily into architecture. So it's a place where they could talk about that. We have some diehard collectors. There's definitely value in that for people, because they can, if you're going to a private club, and that private club has done a limited release of some type of merch that all collectors would want, some of our guys will post on the collector's thread, like, "Hey, I'm going to this place. If anybody wants any of these things, I can pick them up for them." So we do a lot of that.
That's very cool. Like, that's right up my alley. I like that a lot.
Yeah, there's endless reasons why people join these things. I mean, when I started it, I thought for sure that it was my only intention with this was to reciprocate rounds. But there seem to be at least a dozen other reasons why people have joined Preserve Links. I mean, there's people on there that they just joined for the forum, and because I'm the moderator, I could kind of see what everybody's doing on there. There's people that just go on there and they read it and they don't even comment, but they're there just to read it like it's the daily news. You know, there's those people too. Just a ton of different people and a ton of different reasons why someone would be interested in a golf community like this.
So you mentioned that you were a member at some of these other clubs/societies in the past. This is nationwide, right? This is not, located.
It's actually international now. And I never intended it to be that either, but I've had people from all over the world that have reached out, and I tell them, like, "Hey, look, we don't have any events in Thailand next year."
Right.
But we have a guy from Thailand, you know. He's a member. We looked up the club. It's a nice club there out there, and he's in, and he's in for whatever reason. He hasn't come to the States yet that I know of to play golf with us, but yeah, we have guys from all over the world.
All right, so where are you located at in the U.S.? Like, where's home base? What area
home
of the U.S.?
Is Reading, Pennsylvania. It's about an hour west of Philly.
Right, so you're like an hour and 15 from me out there. Can you mention the club that you're at?
Yeah, so I'm a member at, it's called Ledge Rock Golf Club in Moton, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very cool, very cool. Is that the... Why is that so familiar? I just played Penn State's course last weekend. That's on the way out that way, isn't it?
Well, it's right off the turnpike.
Okay.
And I, to be honest, I joined, when I joined there, I joined, one of the main reasons I was at a local club, and one of the main reasons I joined there was because I wanted to get more involved in playing clubs outside my area. And it's a bigger national club, so there's a lot of non-resident national members at Ledge Rock.
Okay.
So it was my first step in building a golf network outside of Reading, Pennsylvania.
So you had this idea kind of like, on the back burner as you joined or moved up to Ledge Rock then, correct?
No, I never had this idea until way after that. I mean, I was into travel golf, and I first joined Ledge Rock, then I started getting myself involved in some of these other societies, and then a group of guys who were dissatisfied with some of these societies kept saying things at other events, like, "Hey, we should do something on our own. We should do something on our own." And then I was just kind of the guy to step up and say, "Okay, I'll do it," you know?
Well, that's always like the mother invention, right? It's one of those things where I don't like this, that, and the other. I know I can do it better. Let's do it better.
Exactly. And I think the biggest issue is with a lot of the other ones is they just got too big. Like, a lot of them, what happens is they just get too big. So if you put yourself in a member shoes at, say, a top 100 club, and you're in a society or a club with thousands of people, I mean, you're just getting hounded to death to host. And
right.
So after you get past a certain amount of golfers, you start to lose the top guys, the guys at the top clubs. And so far, we've not only kept them engaged, but kept them happy, and no one's going anywhere. So We haven't gotten too big yet, I guess.
I can almost kind of envision, you know, let's say you're a member at a top 100 club. Let's say you're a member at, you know, Oakmont, Marion, whatever, any of those. Do you see those people get asked more often to host because people of these kind of, I don't want to say lower tier clubs, but lower profile clubs, you know, join a society like this only to get onto those bigger clubs?
There is that, but I mean, I can tell you this, before even the society, the members at those clubs are already getting hounded.
Okay, I gotcha.
So they're not coming in to Preserve Links to necessarily just host or even just play golf, because they know if they request somewhere, they're obviously going to be requested. They come in for other reasons. A lot of the guys that we have at those top clubs, they're very into the history of their club or the architecture of their club, and they want to share that. So they're looking for guys that are into that stuff that they could bring to the club. For example, we just had guys at Marion, and the member there, he sits on the historical committee. So we didn't just do golf. You know, we did a whole archives tour. We did a clubhouse tour, told us endless stories about the place. They love doing that type of stuff. You know, the last thing they want to be involved in is some type of group where people are calling for tea times. You know, they're not interested in that.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of people that listen to this podcast. I mean, let's be honest, we're golf nerds, right? And who doesn't want to sit down when someone has the same shared interest as them and just, you know, talk for hours?
Yeah, you got to really get beyond the golf course with those people at those high level clubs. If you're talking about like Oakmont or Marion, I mean, I have a good friend that's at Oakmont, and he was just telling me, he's like, you can't imagine. I get random text messages from people I don't even know, and they're like, oh, you hosted this guy who's my boss's friend's cousin. You hosted him like a year ago. He told me you were a member at Oakmont, and I got your phone number, and I was hoping that you could get me out there. I mean, it's just like people don't realize, you know, a member at Oakmont, he's gets a million of those.
Yeah, and it's nameless, faceless. Like, why would I want to do that for you, considering you'll probably never see me, you'll never meet me? You know, yeah, you might send me a card or a bottle of bourbon to say thank you, but, you know, it's there's no connection. And I think you're probably right. When you get to that level, you want connection to people within the game.
Exactly. And that's why, like, at Preserve Links, my whole concentration with this whole thing from day one has been about relationships. You know, we're not an event community. I mean, we have events, but we're not an event based community where we're setting up tee times and people just sign up. I have events in order to push these guys together, get these guys to meet each other so that they can establish their own relationships, build their own networks, and then also reciprocate rounds.
Right, right. And then one of the things I saw behind the scenes, and I think I commented or sent you a message, when they were at Marion, which was what, a week or two ago?
Yeah, just last weekend we were.
Okay. And so I guess down in the archives, you gentlemen signing the book down there, you know, seeing some of the artifacts stuff, and very reminiscent to me of the archives of the USGA house in Far Hills, New Jersey, because, you know, Marion being a seminal club in the history of golf has some enormous history itself just for the club. And seeing those things down there just kind of gave me those USGA vibes. And, you know, that's something that I wouldn't say that I'm big into, but I super appreciate the history behind it. And I could completely see myself, if I was a member at a club like that, wanting to show, you know, everybody of like-minded individuals, like, come look at this stuff that we have here.
I've been to Marion multiple times. That was the first time that I had, actually, that was the second time I had been in the archives. I was there a month ago, and that was the first time. A month ago was the first time I was in the archives, and I was blown away. I mean, what those guys, what that committee there has done to build up that archives, I think they said they had scanned, they're going through the process of digitally scanning everything to make sure they have everything on cloud backup there. And it was something like 250,000 files they've backed up there. It's literally endless, endless golf history in there.
What was the coolest thing that you saw there that just kind of like took your breath away and you were like, oh my God, I can't believe they have this?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of really cool things and artifacts they have from past tournaments. You know, like they have Rory's broken iron in there. You know, they have Justin Rose's bag in there. They have a lot of that type of cool stuff. But what I really enjoyed looking at is they actually have the original plan of the course that was drawn up in there too. And they have a lot of stuff like that in there.
That's very cool. That would be neat.
250,000 files. I mean, there's you can't pick a favorite thing in there, you know?
Yeah, I feel like the history of some of these big clubs really mirror the history of the game itself.
Yeah, I always wonder when I go to these places now, like, because I'm into the history of these places, and I always wonder, like, what's the percentage of people that go to, say, Pine Valley or a Marion or National Golf Links have actually seen these rooms that they have inside the clubhouse, which harbor all this history. And I think most people just care about the tee time. I don't think that they care about this stuff, which is unfortunate because all these clubs have so much of it.
Yeah. A lot of bag tag collectors instead of people that want to kind of get, you know, behind the scenes of what actually goes on at the club and what has gone on at clubs like that.
Yeah.
That's again, I think that's a ringing endorsement for anyone that is looking to join a club or society like this. You're not only, you know, garnering that tee time, but you're making a relationship with a member that has access to archives and artifacts and, you know, historical objects that you would otherwise never see in your life, except for maybe online.
Yeah. And even there, I mean, again, you can't share the amount of stuff. Like these clubs can't create anything online to portray
right.
the amount of stuff that they have.
So you had just gone off on some pretty top tier courses. And for a lot of our listeners, since we're based in, you know, Northeast PA and, you know, I grew up on Long Island, a lot of these people, you know, understand NGL and Pine Valley and all that. What are some of the top courses that you've been able to get on and kind of see behind the scenes at since you've started Preserve Links?
I mean, I've played a lot of really cool places. I've played Pine Valley. I've played Marion. I've played Pebble Beach, which is public. I've played National Golf Links. I've played Shinnecock. I've played a lot of them, and they're all good in their own way.
Right. Well, I was gonna ask you. So, you know, Pine Valley, like, consistently top one, two, or three all the time. Now, again, like anything in life, it's subjective, right? So I understand you can put criteria down and stuff like that. I look at Pine, I obviously never played, right? I look at Pine Valley and I see kind of like trouble everywhere. And I understand the difficulty of the course. The way I always rank a course in my own head is, could I play this, you know, week in and week out? So I've got to ask you, because I've never talked to anyone that's played Pine Valley before. Is that a course that you could see yourself or people see themselves playing, you know, daily, let's say? Or is it just too difficult and too laborious to get around?
So it is. It's extremely difficult. But I am like a 5 or 6 handicap and I could play it every day.
Okay.
I would say if you're a 15 or 20 plus handicap, it's probably not the place for you. I mean, and I think if you're better than I am, if you're like a scratch or a plus, I would think that those guys would love it.
Is there room to miss anywhere? Because these pictures I see make it look like you're threading a needle on every hole.
So Pine Valley is definitely in the conversation for one of my favorite courses. And what I love about Pine Valley is that there's tons of variety there. There is tiny, tiny greens, like 8, which is a split green. The green to the left, which is where the pin normally is maybe the smallest green I've ever played. But then 16 has a massive green. Some of the fairways are tight. Some of the fairways are wide, wide open. Golf Digest did a great aerial flyover of every hole at Pine Valley. You should link it if you can to this.
Okay.
It was a good job, but video and pictures just don't do it justice of the place.
Gotcha.
So to answer your question, there is some spots to miss, but there's not many, and you have to think your way through every shot on that course, and you're going to hit every club in your bag.
So right then and there, hitting every club in your bag, that's important. I mean, think of how many courses people go out and play and it's driver wedge, or they never touch a hybrid, or they never, you know, pull their three wood out. And so, you know, right there and then.
If you just pull a driver out on every hole at Pine Valley, you're dead. Even if you're a good player.
Gotcha. So you need to think your way around the course.
Yeah, you have to. Otherwise, it's definitely a driver off every hole, especially those short par fours. If you don't hit it perfect, you're dead.
All right. So there are a lot of top tier clubs in the country that everyone knows about, right? They're always in the top 100 Golf Digest or Golf Magazine list. What's one of the best underrated private courses, or maybe underrated private courses, like super, super private? They don't even want to hold events. You know, they don't want anything but their members and maybe societies like this coming in, clubs like this coming in. What's one of the best ones you've been to that maybe people have never heard of before?
Oh, that's a good question.
Hey, podcast patrons, it's Dan. Sorry to interrupt this episode, but just wanted to make you aware that we are now being sponsored by Canmore Sports. You've seen it in our Instagram stories, you've seen it in our posts and our reels, and you've heard it right here on Leave the Pin Podcast. Canmore Sports does golf GPS to perfection, whether it be the watches, the handheld devices, anything you need, they've got. Know your exact distances, increase your greens and regulations, decrease your putts, and look like a damn better golfer out there doing it. Go to our Instagram page at Leave the Pin and check out the link to save 15% off all Canmore Sports products. While you're at it, leave us a rating and a comment on iTunes. Help us grow so we can serve you, the people. Now back to our episode.
I was going to say, like, up in the Hamptons around that area, you have Sabonic, but everybody's heard of that. It's a top 100
sure,
course.
Sure, sure, yep, yep.
It just gets overshadowed by its neighbors. Atlantic is a top club up there also. Atlantic is a top club in the state, but not a lot of people know about that, and I don't know that it's ever hosted an event. But there, I mean, that place is great as well. They if you're looking at just conditions, that place is one of the best conditioned courses I've ever played.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I've
and then I'm a homer, you know, I'm a member at Ledrock.
Sure, sure. Oh my God, you gotta fly the home team flag for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I'm a member there, right? It's a great place. It's got a great membership. Our course conditions, our PGA conditions every day there. I mean, we have a membership. It's a golf club, so it's not like your country club. Like, we don't have pool or tennis or any of that. So all of our money goes towards the golf course there.
Gotcha. Yeah. A course for kind of real golf homers, you know, not looking to have all those other accoutrements. And that's nice because all the resources and all the money goes into what you want, which are the conditions and the facilities.
Yeah, I mean, I say it every year. Every year I go back to, because, I mean, now that I'm heavily involved in travel golf, I don't get to play at home nearly as much as I'd like to. But every time I go back, it's nice to see they're always doing work to the course. They're always doing work to the course. So all of our resources go towards the course. We don't have pool, tennis, nothing else.
Now, I know you're, you know, in the Northeast like me, a little bit further west. Is that a course that's open year-round? Do they close in the winter? Do they close for snow? How does that operate?
So they will close the course if there's snow. If the conditions aren't too bad, if there's not snow on the ground, they'll let us play. But what we have there, which is really cool, is we have an unbelievable training facility there. So we have private bays there. They're individual private bays and they're heated. The heaters are pretty unbelievable. They're right over the door, and it puts this shield of heat in front of you. So you could be in there if it's like, say, 40, 45 degrees, you're there in pants and a golf shirt and maybe a pullover, but you could stick your hand through that heat wave and just feel the cold where you can't inside.
Okay, I have never seen that before. That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, so we can hit balls there all year round, and the range is open every day.
Nice.
We have an instructor there. He's great, Andy Miller. He teaches there all year round.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Now, you mentioned that you're involved in golf travel. Is that something that's kind of come out of Preserve Links, or was that what you were involved in beforehand?
Well, I mean, I always wanted to play all these courses. I mean, I was the type of guy where I was playing like team matches at my first home club, small country club, you know, 3 or 4 days a week, or after work at nines when I could. And then once I realized that there was a whole nother world out there of golf, I actually got invited to Oakmont for the first time. I played Oakmont, and at that point in time, I realized, like, wow, there's a big difference between Oakmont and you know, your really nice country club in any local city in America. And that's when I realized, like, I want to be able to play these other courses. So I treated it like a kind of like a sales job. I mean, I have an Excel spreadsheet where I have a contact list, all my friends, where they're members at, people that I meet, people that I keep in contact with. So I network a lot. That's how I started. Now I essentially spend most of my time just maintaining relationships.
Gotcha. So I think one of the questions that people have that listen to this podcast, because we have a really diverse audience set here. We have members at top tier clubs. We have people that only play munis and, you know, tank top and shorts. One of the questions I get all the time from people is like, you know, I'm on the fence about joining a private course. I want the, you know, the betterments that it provides me of agronomy, tee times, all that, but I don't know if I'm good enough. So I'll ask you this as let's say coming from an average golfer's mindset, do you have to be a good golfer to join?
No. I don't think, I mean, at some of the very top 100 clubs, yeah, you have to be a good golfer to join. But in that second tier or third tier of clubs, I mean, they want like-minded people. And it's the same thing at Preserve Links. I mean, I've got guys that are plus handicaps. I've got a guy that's a retired pro. But I also have people that are 30 handicaps, you know?
Yeah, there you go. So that answers the question right there.
Yeah, I mean, and look, at this stage in my life, the way I see it, the stage of everybody who's joining Preserve Links, for example, these guys that join that are plus handicaps, they say, they're like, look, I want to build relationships and meet people. I'm done grinding over 1 and 2 foot.
Yeah, I think people would have a lot more fun in golf if they didn't do that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's hard, I think, for guys that are plus handicaps to start playing with, say, 20 or 30 handicaps. But it's got to be about the experience and the relationship as opposed to golf competition, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I understand, like, if you're putting food on the table through the game of golf, you know, that's a big difference between, you know, let's say someone like you and me, we're going out there. I'm trying to shoot the best score every single time. You know, regardless of if I'm having a fun round with my kids or my friends or whatever, I'm still internally trying to hit the best shot on every single shot that I take. I'm just not worried so much anymore. You know what I mean? It used to define me. Oh, I shot a 79 today. Man, I suck at golf. You know, type deal. And it doesn't anymore.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of these kids are brought up to think that that's all that matters.
Yeah, it's very true, and I see it now a little bit too with my high schooler, who's a very good up and coming junior player who's just finished his sophomore season and is starting to look at colleges and having some D3 programs that can talk to sophomores, start to reach out to him and this, that, and the other. And he'll be of that mindset of, man, I was 5-over today. That sucked. Like, okay, that's, you know,
they're so good. And I've been fortunate to play with some of the best juniors in the country. And I always think to myself, and I hope these kids are actually enjoying this. You know, right. I hope that some of them are so competitive and they are so good, but I hope that if golf, you know, golf is in their future, even if they can't make a living at it.
Yeah, there are a lot of ways to stay involved in the game and actually work within the game that don't require you to be, you know, a top 500 amateur in the world or top 300, you know, pro in the world. And I get it that so much of what they think their livelihood depends upon them shooting well. But one of the things I always do for my boys is I'll stop them in round and be like, just look around, like, look what we're doing right now. Look where we are. You know, I you may have hit a bad shot or you bogeyed that last hole, but look at this place, you know, and you've got to kind of step outside yourself at times to appreciate some of these opportunities of courses that you're able to play.
Yeah, it's totally true. I mean, I also have a lot of golfers that they'll be interested in Preserve Links and we'll have an event somewhere. Like one that comes into mind particularly, we had one at Philly Cricket this year. And I said to one of the guys, I said, he's a really good player and he used to play competitive golf. And I said, oh, did you play here before? And he said, yeah, I played once before, but it was during competition. You know, I didn't get to enjoy it at all.
Right, right.
So being able to go back later in life and actually getting to experience the club side of it, the member side of it, I personally think it's just a completely different world than that competition side where they hosted an event and you showed up and you were so focused you didn't see anything but every shot in front of you for 18 holes.
Yeah, there's two completely different worlds between playing golf and then playing competitive golf. And they're really not even the same game.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I wanted to ask you this. You talked about your home course. Love it. Gave up, you know, plenty of love to it. But if you had to be a member at any other course that you've been able to play at so far, which one would it be? But give me a little bit of why in that answer as well. What stands out at, you know, at one of these courses that you're like, man, this is for me. Is there one out there that you can do that?
No, there's like 10.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
There's like 20. You know, like I said earlier, they're all so good in different ways, you know.
What about one cool aspect, you know, of a club, whether it be something like, I don't know, like Marion's flag sticks, right? Or like the little tram at Manufacturer's Golf Course or something like that, that sticks out. You're like, man, that was super cool to see.
I don't know, to be honest, you got me.
these are the pressing questions.
Yeah, I know. I like the history. So I really enjoy the archives at these places, like the libraries at these places. I mean, the Marion Archives is unbelievable. Pine Valley has an unbelievable library. National's library. I mean, you can find books in there going back to like the 1700s.
Are members allowed to? Maybe this is a stupid ass question, but are members allowed to check those books out, or can they read them inside? You know,
most of them you can. I mean, there's some that are so old that they have to be preserved. So they
can't touch them. Yeah.
In case you can't touch them. But I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff that they have even outside the club. Like for example, up at National, one of the most interesting things they had there. I opened a random book and it was Pete Dye's personal photos and course notes when he built the Honors Course down in Tennessee.
Wow.
Somehow that made it to the National.
Right. Why isn't it down in Tennessee?
I don't know. But they have, I mean, a lot. The one thing about a lot of these modern courses is they don't, they don't have those historical things. They should. Yeah. I mean, a lot of them should. I think every club should, no matter how old they are. I think they should keep historical records and build that stuff. But, you know, I just thought it was awesome. Pete Dye had, like, not just construction photos. He had photos of his crew, the guys working at Honors and building the course. And then he hand wrote these cards that were placed underneath the pictures in this book. It was just really cool.
Yeah, that's neat. I love seeing, you know, really in this game, you know, I'm sure just like you, I've played a lot of golf, a lot of different places. And the older that I get, the more I appreciate the behind the scenes things, you know, the how and why things are done the way they are. And I love that every place has its own history and whatever reason they have for it. I love places that hold on to that history as well.
Yeah.
So you've been to a lot of pro shops, I take it. I am an individual, and my wife will tell you this, that probably spends way too much on items I don't need at pro shops. What's your go-to when you are at a club?
So I'm not a shirt guy anymore. I used to be a shirt guy, like just grab a shirt and go, you know?
Yeah.
But then your closet quickly fills up.
Yes, it does.
And eventually that shirt gets thrown in the trash anyway. So now I try to grab things that are more collectible things. Like I started grabbing logo balls. I grab logo balls. I grab, accessories, poker chips or metal ball markers. I grab those. Putter covers. I collect putter covers from all the different places I go to.
Okay, that's a cool one. Yeah, I used to be a big ball marker guy, and then during a round, yeah, I was looking for a specific ball mark, and I have them all in a bag, you know, in my bag, and I'm like, I'm going through. I'm like, man, all I want to do is find this one. I couldn't find anywhere, so I dumped them all out, and it was like at that moment when 75 to 100 dumped out, and I'm still spending 3-4 minutes looking for this one ball mark. I was like, okay, I think I have a problem right now.
I used to think I had a problem too until I again started Preserve Links, and I see there's people out there with much bigger problems.
Oh yeah, there always is.
I have a friend that when we went to Pine Valley, he spent $6,500 in the pro shop.
So that's a lot of money.
And I've seen at least a handful of guys spend a few thousand in there. Same thing at National. Shinnecock, actually, they just built a brand new pro shop. It's beautiful. It's huge. And they've got probably one of the nicest pro shops now I've seen, but it's a collector's dream. I mean, they've got everything in there.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a lot of money, but I also can completely understand how you can get to that price pretty quickly. You know, a lot of these places too are probably one of those things where, you know, you say to yourself, this is my rationale, whether it be right or wrong, it's my rationale. I say, am I ever going to get back here again in my life? And I always ration it by saying, no, I'm probably not. So I need a flag. I need a belt. I need a quarter zip. I need a hoodie. I probably need a hat too. You know, those things add up.
Yeah. Another thing I'm big on is I always buy the club history book.
Okay. That's a neat one.
Yeah. So actually I maintain a library for Preserved Links. We have, I want to guess maybe 300 different books. But they're all quality books from top places, hard titles to get. Now, last week when we were at Marion, you have to go through the library to get to the archives. And I was looking through their library, and I'm like, oh, I got this one. Oh, I got this one. And I'm thinking, like, you know, this library is definitely one of the best I've seen. But I have a lot of these. And then I said to the member, how many books do you guys have in your collection? And I think he said, like, over 2,000. And I was like, wow, I'm so far off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, now you're talking about a club that's got all the titles from back in the early 1900s on. I mean, some of these clubs have written and published books multiple times over the last 100 years.
Right, and some of them are priceless. You know, you can't even put a monetary value on some of them because they might be one of one, or you know, we have one here in the States, and the sister club in Scotland has the other one.
Yes, there's a lot of that, and I mean, whenever these clubs release new books, they essentially only buy X amount of them, and when they're sold, they're sold, they're gone. So, right. To buy them secondhand, I mean, it's super hard to find them. I mean, I scout libraries for them, different libraries across the country for them. I scout estates. The last thing I want to do is get involved in auctions, because some of the prices they go for in those auctions are huge.
Yeah, through the roof when you get to like golden auctions and stuff like that.
Through the roof.
Yeah.
I mean, I have so many books. I have so many books that I paid direct that I bought at the club that are still available at those clubs that are like $100 to $200. And then in the golden age auctions, they go for like $3,000, you know?
Right, right, right. Because people just don't have access to that club to purchase it.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just, so it's definitely not something I would be collecting if I didn't have access to the places to actually buy them at.
A lot of people would be mad at me if I didn't ask this question, because there are so many people that are just in love with Augusta and everything that, you know, it is and stands for, and they, you know, it kind of becomes a ritual for them to watch it every April. Have you played the National yet?
I have not. I mean, I have a few friends that have played there. I've heard, you know, it's just as good as you see on TV.
Right, right. Yeah, that's.
But I've also heard the experience there is unbelievable, and that you don't see on TV. Staying in the cottages, eating dinner there. I've heard of the wine room there. The wine room there is apparently one of the best in the country.
Yeah, I can only imagine, you know, waking up in one of like the Eisenhower cottages or something, and walking out and having the putting green, you know, right 100 feet from the door there. It's just, it's got to be insane to have that place almost to yourself.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to go there?
Obviously. Right, because if you're lucky enough to get tickets to any event there, it's, even though it's an intimate setting, because the tickets are limited, it's not like going to a U.S. Open where there's 70,000 people a day or something. You know, it's still mobbed. There are still some corners of the course you can get to where there's no one around. But for the most part, it's still mobbed. And I can't imagine that place with nobody but members milling around. You know,
I've been to the Masters a bunch. I mean, it's a great event. But yeah, I'm with you. I can't. I know a lot of people that have played it, and I can't imagine playing it myself.
Yeah, yeah, no, very cool, very cool. So food is another item that's kind of always on people's minds when they go to these courses or someone hosts them at a private club. What's been one of the best items that's really lived up to the hype at a course that you've played?
Well, in the Philly courses are all famous for the snapper soup. You know, Aronimink has it, Marion has it, Philly Cricket has it, Pine Valley has it. I've had it at all of them. It's great. Marion's peanut butter jelly bacon is great. The National lobster lunch is great. Oakmont's cheeseburger soup. Some of these things are such unique, specific things. It's like you're only going to have them there, and you're not going to have them anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to try it.
Yeah, of course you have to try it. For sure. You know, I mean, the one that comes immediately to mind is the Olympic burger dog. But I have not been to Olympic. But you know, when I go there, obviously, that'll be what I order.
Yeah, that was my thought process behind that question. You know, everyone says, "Oh, it's the greatest thing in the world," and I'm sure it's great, but it's just a hamburger in a different form.
Yeah, that's the way it is at all these places.
Yeah, I mean, like maybe I'm being too cynical, but I you know, I'm sure if I was there too, I'd be like, this is the greatest thing ever.
Up where you're at, have you played Country Club of Scranton?
So my buddy's gonna
have the hot dog there, right? The jalapeno hot dog or something?
Yeah, so I've got two buddies that are members, and this entire year, they have asked over and over and over. And I've just never been able to make it work. But I literally have an open standing invitation whenever I want. And I still have yet to been able to make it work with my schedule.
Have you never played there?
I've never played there.
Oh, it's free.
It's like 45 minutes away from it. Everybody sends me pictures all the time. Every week he plays, he's a member up there. He's the superintendent at the course by me that we're, it's a public course, but that we were members at this year. And he's like, dude, you just got to come. I'm like, I know, but you know, the boys have tournaments and baseball and work. And it's like, you know, he always plays midweek during the day. And that's like the most difficult thing for me to accommodate, you know?
The greens there are wild.
It's, if it plays half as good as it photographs, it's got to be amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Bob Ford, actually, from Oakmont, claimed that they have the second best greens in the state.
I mean, that's a pretty damn ringing endorsement considering some of the courses in PA.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to meet Bob Ford right before he left Oakmont. And when I told him I was from Eastern PA, that was the first thing he said. Have you ever gone up to Country Club of Scranton?
It's a very small world. And I'm sure you've seen, too, with starting Preserve Links and continuing on, that it really is kind of a small insular, you know, society that golf is.
Yeah, it's way small. I mean, I love when I hear members will text me randomly all the time and say, hey, I just ran into so-and-so, another member on the first tee, you know. I had just last week, one of the guys told me they had a group down in South Carolina, I think it was, out. And they got randomly paired with somebody, and the guy, they didn't find out till after nine holes. All of them were in Preserve Links. So
that's,
it is
hilarious.
World, and people do randomly find each other. But what I like most is when guys will tell me like, hey, you know, I just got around in with this guy, and it's like, oh, I didn't even know that they knew each other, you know, but they found some common interest on the forum. On our forum, it's also like kind of like an app on your phone, and they're able to communicate privately with each other through there. So they'll meet and talk through there, and then you know, they schedule rounds, and then I'll usually get a text like sometime after that, like, hey, you know, I'm going here with this guy or whatever. Another good one is one of the guys this year. So some of these resorts post COVID have been really, really hard to access. Like Bandon Dunes they're booking out into 2024 and 2025, I heard. Wow. So yeah. So one of the guys posted that he had a scheduled round out there in January and somebody backed out. So he posted on there, if anybody wants to take this guy's spot. So somebody took it right away. And I thought, oh, how cool is this? This guy's going to go out to Bandon with guys that maybe he hasn't even met yet before. And then somebody else posted that he randomly put something on our forum a year ago that he had two open spots to Bandon, and two Preserve Links members took them, and they had a great time, and they're friends now. They're all, you know, good friends after that. And I thought, well, you know, that's a story that I'm hearing a year later. I didn't even know. But it's cool to see these relationships fester between each other as time goes on.
Yeah, that really is something that I think this game provides more than any other sport or connection out there. You know, it's one of those things where, like, if you're a cool person and you love golf, like, hey, we're friends already. You know what I mean? We just need to, you know, hash out the rest of the details.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, if there's one thing that I constantly do brag about when it comes to Preserve Links, it's the members that I have. I mean, they're all great people. They're all open to hosting. I mean, they build these relationships amongst each other. They're inclusive, and they let other people into these groups. And lots of golf is shared.
Yeah. Have you I know you had mentioned possibly starting a podcast for Preserve Links. Is there any thought about doing merch? Do you guys do merchandise ever? So, you know, for like the outside public at all, or is it only kind of member based?
Yeah. So no, all our merch is just for members. And then another thing we do is we have like a little member shop, which is just one or two things. Like I try to stock one or two things from the best places that I go to.
Okay.
So I'll grab like one or two extra things, And then whatever the cost is, that's what we sell them for on the member shop. The purpose of that is if somebody like Marion, for example, if somebody's on there from another state and they're like, well, I'm not going to come all the way out there, or I don't think I'm going to get back there anytime soon, but I played Marion 10 years ago and I've got this old yellow hat that used to be white and I want a new one. I mean, that's so we provide them the ability to buy that hat. And I mean, it's nothing stocked like you would see at the club. That's the purpose of it. It's just so that somebody could replace a white shirt or a white hat or whatever.
Okay. Gotcha.
So we do offer that. And then as far as the podcast goes, I'll send out once, maybe twice a year, a suggestions email. This way people, I would hope people see that and they're like, okay, well, I'll give him my suggestion here instead of me getting suggestion texts all day, every day. But, you know, people have asked, like, hey, can we have a podcast? Like, we should do a podcast. It would be cool to do a podcast at this club or that club in their archives, you know. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. So I sent something out to the membership. And, you know, I got a ton of positive feedback. So I would like to do it. I just don't know the direction of which way it's going to go first. And will it be public or will it just be something for our members? I don't know.
Yeah, like I think that would be so cool to have, whether it be random hosts or one person, you know, that hosts and brings on people that have been to these clubs to kind of talk about their whole entire experience from playing to behind the scenes to what they ate, what they spoke about, you know, even getting there. Like, is it difficult to get to from different areas of the country? And then your members have that ability to listen and say, you know what? I'm thinking about going to Maidstone next year when so-and-so hosts, and let me listen to that episode. And, you know, A, it gets them pumped for it, or B, it's, well, you know, it's really hard to get to from, you know, Northern California or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, so the benefit for us is we have all that information. It's a good idea. I mean, I assume we'll probably do it.
Very cool. Very cool. So listen, Nick, give everybody out there kind of the ins and outs, how they can reach you, how they can contact you, the Instagram account and where else to follow along with this club that you've got going on, which honestly is awesome. And I love it myself because obviously I'm a big golf nerd and I'm not going to have an opportunity to play these courses. So it gives me an ability to follow along and get some, you know, secondhand behind the scenes information for these amazing courses across the US and internationally as well.
Yeah, so our website is www.preservedlinks.com. And I'm revamping that whole website. I'm going to do more of in the past it's been a very simple website. But I'm going to do more of including all that stuff in areas that the public can see, which is events that we have. And more, I mean, I do post the events that we have and are on our Instagram as well, but I'm going to do more as far as showing the outsiders the whole club experience that we go through. They can also find us or follow us at @preserved_links on Instagram.
And we'll put all these links in the show notes as well for people and then on the Instagram story, you know, so they can just click and follow right along.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Nick, look, it's been an absolute pleasure. I love getting some behind the scenes info on these amazing places and can't thank you enough for your time as well.
Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot for having me, man.
Of course. All right, people. So either get busy golfing or get busy dying.